something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories all and to use them.
Wanna take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I have always, always been fascinated by weather. When I was in the Air Force, stationed at Amarillo Air Force Base in Texas, Lynn Whitlick, who I've actually had on the show and myself, used to pack ourselves inside a little Volkswagen and chase tornadoes and take video and peddle it to local TV stations and stuff. And, you know, we would chase them sometimes all the way up into Oklahoma. So we were pretty crazy and pretty wild about violent weather. Scott Stevens has been fascinated himself with weather since he began keeping a weather diary for a scouting merit badge. That would have been a long time ago now. A year later, he was reporting conditions in his small town in Idaho to the area TV stations. By his senior year in high school, he was working at KIFI-TV, the NBC affiliate in Idaho Falls, as a studio camera operator, then as a photographer for the news department. Scott went on to the University of Kansas to study meteorology. During his sophomore year at KU, he auditioned for an opening at KTKA in Topeka. And 5 months later, he in fact landed a job. However, it cost him twice as much to keep the job as it paid. Typical beginnings in broadcasting. But 13 months later, he had gone from a 2.5-hour, 5-day-a-week job to being the main guy. That can happen in broadcasting, too. Not long afterward, a phone call came from Omaha, Nebraska. That would be RFD-TV. He also spent a year in the Capital District of New York as the chief for WRGB. In 1996, returned home to eastern Idaho, where he does weather on KPVI-TV. So he is a TV weatherman. Is that fair to say, Scott?
That's a fair assessment. That's what I get up and the people watch me to do. It's a great job, Art.
Being a TV weatherman, here's something I've wondered about a lot, Scott. Mm-hmm. Do you mind? I've always been curious how much homework and how much prep time a TV weather guy has to put in.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, you only do like, what, 3 or 4 minutes on the screen at best?
3 or 4 minutes, 3.5 is what they tell us. I usually get away with taking about 4.
Okay, so maybe.
It really annoys the producers, but they'll get over it in time.
Maybe 4 minutes.
Maybe 4 minutes.
That's not a lot of on-camera time. How much time is required? I mean, is it like a full-time job?
Oh, it's definitely a full-time job because what you need to do is spread out across the course of the day. And thank you for the Internet and the ability to access so much information from home. You can go to work essentially prepared for the day's tasks. And you finalize and the last minute data comes in, in the 2 to 3 hours prior to showtime. But essentially, you've got a very good handle on what's happening during the course of the day. Now, there are surprises, as we're well aware of, but, 80% of the work is done before you even go in.
What is your, as a weatherman, I mean all weathermen across the country, I'm sure, have similar batting averages. They're mostly working from the National Weather Service information and so forth and so on. So it's not an exact science. We all know that. What do you think is your rough accuracy?
Oof. Well, when we kept numbers, when we kept a log, out about 4 days, I was about 3.2 degrees off on high temperatures. And that was kind of one of the red flags for me, is that accuracy began to slip, even as technology and advances in the science should have stated otherwise.
Ah.
And now, at 4 days out, I'm at about 4 degrees error.
Uh-huh. That's only the temperature. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things. There's whether it's going to rain or be sunny, whether it's going to be partly cloudy, mostly cloudy, or the sun shall shine upon us. I mean, there's all these, and then there's humidity and barometric pressure and all kinds of different variables, not just temperature, right?
That's just the one factor, exactly. And that's the one that's easiest to quantify. And so that's probably why it's done. The other is precipitation, obviously, and it's a yes or no. Did it rain, did it snow, or did it not? And so we give a range of values, 20%, 40%, 60%.
How's your accuracy? How's the accuracy? Well, that's right. That's what they are doing these days, a 20 or a 30% chance of rain instead of maybe
yes or no.
Rain.
Yeah, instead of yes or no. And with snow out here, they want to know how much rather than the yes or no. And that's not something that's necessarily required when we do liquid. In the warmer months, how much rain are we going to get? Well, we'll just say a couple hours of thunderstorms and then clearing as the day moves on. But when it comes to snow, we need to quantify that. And so that adds another variable that we try to nail down.
Okay.
Sometimes with success and sometimes not so much with success.
That's right. Well, you're just not your everyday weather man. I mean, look, most weather guys, TV, radio, or whatever, if you were to ask them about weather modification, they'd go, give me a break, weather modification, science fiction, baloney.
Where's the silver iodide so we can go spray the clouds and do the cloud seeding?
Okay, you began to see an error in what you predicted or the National Weather Service did and what, in fact, happened at any... Somehow or another, you began to think the weather was being manipulated. Is that correct?
Well, it was instance after instance where, and it goes back to the winters of 97, 98, and 98, 99, where across the entire country, there were just big struggles in forecasting winter storms any farther out than beyond about 72 hours, three days. And you should be able to see large events coming over the horizon. The bigger the event, the higher it's going to poke its head up over the horizon so you can see it arriving. And those two winters were just tough, Art. And so I began to think that something's amiss. And that alone opened my mind to go look at some of these fringe websites when it concerns anomalies showing up in the weather.
All right, some of the viewers of KPVI are probably listening right now.
I hope.
Have you ever mentioned weather modification or weather control on your TV show, doing the weather?
What I'll do is point out anomalies that show up within the satellite or radar imagery, because it becomes very easy to spot them once you know what to look for.
Right, but you dare not actually say it.
Just last month, you point out square clouds, large square indentations.
Square clouds.
In cirrus overcast across Nevada. And that affected how the amount of snow we got out of a particular storm.
Square clouds?
Yeah, square clouds.
Do you have pictures of square clouds?
Oh, and I'm sure a lot of other folks do, too. And
well, I don't.
You don't?
No,
you
I don't. Are they on your website?
They're on the website. They're on the website.
I'm on the way.
And that's weatherwars.info.
Uh-huh. I'm there.
And
show me to a square cloud.
Let's go to the best squares. There's a we've got the navigation on the left.
I see it, the best squares. All right, the best squares. I just clicked on that,
right.
And here we are.
Well, the first picture we've got up.
I see a bird.
you see a bird.
Yeah. First photograph looks like a giant bird.
Oh, I must be on a different page.
No.
Best squares and growing daily?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. Doesn't look like a...
Could be a bird. Sometimes it's fun to just lay back in the grass and look at the clouds.
Yes. Yeah. In this case, though, we're looking for squares.
When we find hard right angles, the capital letter L shows up frequently. And from what I've been able to gather is to align or electrify a portion of the sky to get this L shape, we're actually, in fact, imparting or pushing the flat edge of the atmosphere in one direction. And then we'll tuck in the short side of the capital letter L, and we just impart angular momentum in it. And it's just a process of steering the storms. But it's there all the time.
Okay, I've been going down the page. These are very interesting.
You see the second picture. It looks like a carpenter square. And at the apex of the square, there's another square cloud.
Actually, it does, yeah.
Formed off of that. And these are just regular summer afternoon cumulus clouds.
All right.
That are forming. And the drier an atmosphere, the easier it'll be to spot these signatures.
These signatures mean what?
Well, and I mean because a typical cumulus cloud will form, to get a cloud to form in the first place, you need to have two ingredients. First is moisture, and second, you've got to have warm air or lift. And as that warm air rises, that parcel of moist air will rise into cooler air. And in the process of rising and cooling off, will begin to condense.
Okay.
And there will be a point, and we call that the lifted condensation level, where you get the flat bottoms of these clouds. Hmm. And along that flat bottom, it's basically the cloud base. And these clouds are not conforming to that basic fundamental process of cloud formation. So to have a cloud, you've got to have lift, or if you don't have lift, then you shouldn't have a cloud.
All right.
And they're just not behaving.
They're just not behaving. Hold that thought. We're going to take our break. Hold that thought, and we will be back in a moment. Secret. Okay, out there, follow along with us. We've got the link to weatherwars.info, and I'm on the Best of Squares page. So if you're able to get to the internet, follow along with us. If not, then let's let Scott, before the bottom of the hour, explain what it is, because that's what's important about these clouds that's not right, where that leads you to believe somebody's got a hand in all this.
Well, what's curious is that we're dealing with a gas or a fluid. And when you're studying meteorology, fluid dynamics, or dynamics is one of the courses or fundamentals of the atmosphere that you need to begin to understand.
Okay.
And you can basically forecast. You need to know how it operates. And we don't find squares showing up in fluids and gases naturally, free-flowing fluids. In the old days, we used to call cirrus clouds mare's tails, just long, straight wisps with a bit of a curl on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have sharp hooks and turn at hard right angles in very, very short distances.
Which means what?
Which means that something is at work. Something is playing in the skies. And I didn't know what it was, and I know there are a lot of other weather people that see things in the sky, and what's pointed out to them don't know how to explain it. And so you have to begin a journey of discovery and figure out, all right, what in the inventory of technology is out there that is capable of doing this?
Oh, and well, so there are many possibilities, but I mean, I guess I want to stick with this. You know, as a weatherman, that there is something wrong, and I'm still not satisfied. Square clouds, yeah, that's not usual.
No, it's not usual. No, and let's go to the next one.
Yeah,
farther down.
Fine.
We're looking at a late July evening in 2004.
What do you want me to... Oh, further down on the same page?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The best squares, okay.
Stick with this.
Okay.
And these squares will manifest themselves in all kinds of clouds. They can be low-level cumulus clouds, you know, alto cumulus clouds or alto cirrus, or even higher up in the cirrus clouds that we just looked at. They'll manifest themselves in all of those varieties. And it just looks like somebody's come along and taken a stamp and just cut out chunks of these clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And for no reason at all would you expect to see these hard right angles or long.
What running. About wind patterns? I mean, couldn't high-level winds shear and do weird things like this? And take something that is, you know, a normal sort of puffy cloud and turn it into something with, as you point out, right angles.
I would love to know how it's done.
So would I.
If that's truly possible, naturally, I'd like to see it simulated and somebody replicate an instance where that occurs.
Okay. How would you imagine it could be done unnaturally? If you don't imagine a natural force that could account for this, what unnatural force could account for it?
We have to begin to look at something, that's invisible. It has to be something invisible that can be displayed or put in the skies to provide these just unusual shapes. And my conclusion was that there had to be some kind of electromagnetics that was capable of imprinting itself on the skies.
Oh boy!
To end up with whatever intent was deemed.
So you believe an electromagnetic force could do this?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that's the only feasible answer, considering the oddities, the odd shapes that show up in the skies. And it's not just squares.
Okay, if this is true, then I would think other diligent, and I don't mean rip and read weathermen. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of those, right?
Yes.
A lot of rip and read newsmen, too.
I want to hear it, but yes, there are.
Yeah. So other diligent weather guys or gals like yourself would have noticed this. Have they?
I think they have. And I think as time evolves and this information becomes more widespread, there will be a lot of, I wondered what that was. Going on in the weather departments around the country and around the world, for that matter.
Well, maybe there are now, and it's just something that most weathermen would be really quite afraid to approach as a subject. I mean, to even hint that there's a manipulation going on in our sky.
I agree. I fully agree. And it has taken me 6 years to come to that conclusion and have a certainty about it to be able to be here on the phone with you tonight. I mean, a lot of things have had to happen for me to end up here tonight.
Well, I'm sure they have. Have you had conversations with other meteorologists, other people in your position? Yes?
Certainly. And it's fascinating to go through and, number one, bring up the topic in the first place, which I enjoy doing, and seeing what the reactions are. And, number one, it's not possible in their mindset. It does not fall within the box that is their belief system. It just isn't there. There are, you know, ways of shooting chemicals and particles into the sky or into the clouds to try to alter a storm in that regard. But the concept of using electricity or ionization to begin to manipulate the weather has just, it's not there at all.
Okay, I'm down to May of 2004. It says, this one just made me shake my head. How's this stuff not seen by anyone with open eyes? And I must agree, this is... has very much, it just looks unnatural to me. It doesn't look natural.
You know, and I took one picture of that formation. I wish now, having gone back and downloaded the pictures from that day's trip, that I had taken a couple more. But it's a phenomenal picture of, I don't know how you describe it. It's a central bar or a central cloud, and then there's a sharp right angle headed west on the lower end of it.
Okay, I can see a little bit, Scott, where the person who processed this photograph put a little bit too much contrast, mm-hmm. Brought up a little too much contrast, but it doesn't change
the shape
of the...
I bring up the contrast.
At all.
First of all, to find out what the high clouds are like beyond it, behind it.
Ah.
And there's actually two darker areas in the center and then in the upper left portion of the cloud where the high clouds simply aren't there. And we'll find that there are holes, pluses and minuses, where it looks like the sky has been pushed and pulled simultaneously, and that gives us a kind of symmetry.
That's a good point.
That shows up in the overcast.
So you actually, as you study this now, but most people don't. They look up and they see a rabbit or a bird, like I did at first, you know. But they don't study where there are holes where there ought not be. They don't study clouds that have unnatural formations, as though something has whizzed by them or cut through them or in some way changed them. That's true.
That's true.
Most people just don't look at that, do
they? There's no reason to. There's no reason for them to, because it's all natural. Right? And that's why it isn't done. And
that's what we're taught.
It's exactly what we're taught.
That's our upbringing, those are clouds. That's just naturally a random formation up there. That's how we're all brought up by mommy and daddy and our teachers.
Well, and that it's a beautiful manifestation of a natural process.
That's right.
And nature is, in its perfection, is the ultimate beauty. But within that perfection, you can find the hand of man.
The hand of man.
And it's there. It's there. And it becomes obvious because it just doesn't fit in. We get...
All right. Hold on, Scott. Hold it right there. We now are at the bottom of the hour. Scott Stevens, who is a TV weatherman, who is speaking out, and you don't find them very frequently. That is, people like Scott. Most TV weathermen... they would scoff at a suggestion of the hand of man in the formation of some clouds. But you really, really might want to take a look at these. We've got a link at coasttocoastam.com, weatherwars.info. See you there.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. My guest is well worth a listen. His name is Scott Stevens. He's never been on with us before. And what he's basically telling us is there's something wrong with the weather. Now, that's what he does for a living. He's a TV weatherman, just like the TV weatherman you've got there at home. He's on KPVI-TV, which I guess is in eastern Idaho. That's where he does the weather, and he knows something is wrong with the weather. And a little while ago, he said, a lot had to happen for me to get here. In a moment, we'll ask. I'm curious myself, what had to happen for him to get here? Would you like... A TV weatherman who would say, hey, there's something wrong with the weather. Now, this is not exactly the norm. You just don't go out and find TV weathermen who are saying what Scott is saying. So I am curious, how did you get here? What was the process involved in getting on this program to probably make life hard for yourself?
Well, I hope it doesn't make hard. What it could do is put us all out of work. If you think about it, if things are as advanced as I now believe they are, you could have your forecast show up in your mailbox Sunday night for the entire week, and by Saturday have it 95% to 99% accurate. It's just
Think it is that manipulated?
Yep, I really do. I really, really do. And how I came to that conclusion was several years in the making, and just exploring other anomalies that showed up first within radar, because we get these flashes and blooms.
Oh, I know. Let's back up a little bit. I want to know how you got here. I mean, did you, began a website? I don't think you've written a book yet that I'm aware of.
Oh, no.
But you're a weatherman, TV weatherman. So how do you get from there to Coast AM?
Very quickly. It happened in about 3 months' time, Art.
Okay.
3 months' time. It happened just that rapidly.
There must have been a first step, something you did that got somebody's attention.
I had written Art, what's his name, George Urey, his urban survival site.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little article about whether there was an imprint within the hurricanes or an intentionality within those hurricanes that affected Florida this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote back and said I believe there was, and then presented some images showing examples of this scalar imprint in the clouds, in the radar, and so forth. And he posted a page, and it has just snowballed since the second week of October.
Okay.
So it's happened very, very quickly.
All right. So is this all a result of a question that was asked of you that began this line of investigation, or were you on it before that?
I was on it before. I was definitely on it before. I had received emails from people asking about contrails. I had received pictures of odd things in the sky that you try to blame on the mountains. They're mountain wave clouds. Oh, they're this, or there's some kind of lenticular thing. Well, they didn't fall into those categories of clouds.
How do they not? Well, okay. The weather is an extremely complex system, I suppose, only explained by somebody who understands chaos theory or something.
And that's what you have to start with, is the randomness of nature.
Yes.
And then you see the imprints or the local effects of the mountains, the orographics. So we would see lenticular clouds on mountaintops, and then the echoes downstream out in the open valleys. But clouds were showing up with resonances that did not match the local terrain. Nowhere close. And even these lines would suddenly jump a half a resonance. And then where one line would end, the next one would start at basically that exact width next to it. So it's like taking four fingers and taking three and then trying to interlock them.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed the hand of man in a natural process.
And you think this is some kind of scalar technology?
There are probably other technologies that are capable of playing within the skies, but I think this is the one that is the most prevalent. And who and where and when,
That was about where I was going to go. In other words, do you imagine this to be a product of something like HARP that originates on ground in Alaska? Is it a product of something being manipulated by satellite? There have been a lot of rumors of that. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think all are a possibility. I think we have to consider all of those options. HARP is, from my understanding, it's one antenna. And what we're looking at in the sky is a resonance or the interference patterns of many. I mean, ultimately, many, many happening simultaneously. So I believe it's far more advanced than just simply harp. That's a wonderful toy, and I'm sure they're having fun playing with it.
Mm-hmm. But possibly satellite. The Russians have bragged they can control weather, perhaps the path of a cyclone or even the creation of a cyclone by satellite.
Well, let's take them at the word and say they can. Let's take them at their word. Because you look at the storms, and as these hurricanes tend to spin up and approach a certain velocity, almost to the limit of what the atmosphere can handle, because it looks like they're being spun up again towards Category 5 and beyond, or very close to that limit. They're revealing bars, solid lines crossing the eye walls in an exceptionally high shear environment.
I did see some really weird things with some of the hurricanes that were approaching Florida. Some of the oddest things happened. For example, it actually stopped at one point, and I can't remember. It might have been in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm trying to recall this last hurricane season. One hurricane stopped in front of an island.
There were so many.
And just made a lateral path and then took off again, as though it was so odd.
It was on a schedule. It needed to stop there and was waiting for the next, wavelength, the next trough coming in from the western U.S. as it approaches the mid-Atlantic. Okay, let's start this hurricane up. We can have it catch this incoming cold front so we can rain out.
I agree with you. It very much looked manipulated. But the next question, of course, is why anybody would manipulate hurricanes, spool them up to near Cat 5, and then head them into land where they're going to do a tremendous amount of damage. If we have control of the weather, then why are we controlling it to our detriment? Or is it not we that are under control?
It obviously must not be we. It must not be we. So it's someone else. If this was a tool that had been invented publicly, it would have been used publicly for the public's betterment, the public's good. We would have dealt with these hurricanes, probably brought them ashore in places that needed the rainfall in a somewhat weakened state, and then provided the rainfall for those parched areas.
Yes, but that's one thing. The wholesale death and destruction that occurred in Florida in this last hurricane season, if it was manipulated by another nation state, for example, would be considered an act of war.
Wouldn't it, though?
Absolutely, yes. It would, yes.
Yes, it would. And that appears to what has happened. The other thing is, what happened after the hurricane? This economy needed a kick,
yes.
And it got one. It got one. We measure our economy, our gross domestic product, the GDP, by cycling dollars through, the flow, the movement of money.
Yes.
And this gave that economy and those areas an incredible kickstart. Yes, there were a lot of tears shed over it, but that happened.
Well, now you're telling an even more convoluted story, or the possibility of one. Now you imagine that we're doing it to ourselves.
Well, I'm not saying we're doing it to ourselves. I'm just saying it's happened.
Well, I doubt.
And that's a side benefit.
I doubt China wants to improve the U.S. economy, just as a shot in the dark.
But
here,
ultimately, Art, is it? Because we're spending insurance company reserves. Is that healthy?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. But you sort of made the case that it stimulated the economy.
It did. And if you look at the numbers in unemployment area in the southeast part of the U.S., there was an immediate detrimental impact. And then afterwards, the administration was ballyhooing it in the November stats.
I had some fellows on last week. I hope you heard the show on HARP. Did you?
I did not.
You did not?
I did not. This is getting very close to bedtime for me.
I see. All right. Well, they made the case that the HARP project has the ability to heat the ocean ahead of a hurricane. Now, kind of like a Pied Piper, the hurricane would follow the warmest waters.
Sure.
Was their contention.
Sure.
So they could just sort of Pied Piper a hurricane along where they wanted to go by heating the first little bit of the ocean, the top layer of the ocean, artificially.
You're certainly priming the environment for the arrival of the storm. That's what that process would do. You only have to increase it a degree or two, and it makes a wonderful, it's a big difference.
Do you have any, is there any way to guess from looking at the effects where the technology would have to be coming from?
From my understanding of this technology, it could be coming from anywhere. It truly could be coming from anywhere, since these waves are capable of being transmitted through solid objects. They're not attenuated by solid mass, so they can be focused above and beyond or through the Earth. It can be done from the moon, for all that matters. It's happening. And what we need to do is recognize that it is and begin to demand answers.
Of whom?
We need answers. It puts us weathermen in a rather precarious position because we're looking at data. We're analyzing what's happening. And there's a missing delta. There's missing information that is not going into the computer models that we need to get accurate forecasts. And that has got to be rectified. And you've got to wonder about the guys back in D.C. or in Silver Springs, Maryland, that originate much of the information that we look at, if they're aware of it. And my feeling is that they just have to be. And you can read between the lines in some of their technical discussions that things are going on. When they discuss 3 and 4 standard deviation from normal events.
By the way, a much more mundane item, but the National Weather Service recently sort of overhauled the entire U.S. weather reporting system. And I must say, it's the most screwed up mess I've ever seen in my entire life. In fact, the weather forecast for our area, as called up by zip code, ain't even close to right.
No, it's awful. It's an awful automation process. And that's what they've done, is just try to automate it. And it's really bad. The Mets that have to put out these grid points as they talk about it don't like it either.
Well, I called the National Weather Service because I read the weather for my local, my station, KNYE. I read every night, I read it. And I finally picked up the phone and called the National Weather Service in Las Vegas, and they said, we don't know what the hell they're doing in Washington. Yeah. So here's a page you can go to, and I've got a special page I can go to, but they've really got it screwed up, the whole national system.
And something else that they have to do is blend, say, Vegas's forecast with Salt Lake's at the interface of southern Utah.
Sure.
Or with Flagstaff in northern Arizona.
Sure.
And if you've got a forecaster in Flagstaff who doesn't like what the guy in Vegas is doing, they have to hammer out an agreement on those bordering counties.
I see.
And it's not pretty. So one guy can be right and one guy can be totally wrong, but because they have to come to some agreement, they'll both be wrong.
Well, here's what I see. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a weather nerd, so I read what's called the forecast discussion. And in that forecast discussion, Scott, many times they're looking at, for example, 2 or 3 different computer models, and they're trying to make some sort of forecast out of models that are not in agreement with each other about what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And those models can be in disagreement in as soon as 6 and 12 hours from when they were initially run. And you shouldn't see those separations, that delta, that difference between the two, showing up until you're 2 and 3 days out. But it shows up sometimes immediately. Hmm. And oftentimes, even the initializations. So your 0 hour is bad. And so what does that mean? That means you've got to wait for 6 hours or 12 hours before you can run the whole thing over again and try over. So this is information that has to be incorporated within these model suites. And it has to happen soon. Because the poor guys back at the Hurricane Center are just pulling their hairs out. You know, and people evacuating when they don't need to evacuate.
There was some of that, yes.
There was, and that's an expensive proposition.
I guess there are some weathermen who know, like yourself, and then others who don't. And that difference is what? The guys who rip and read and the guys who really study weather? Or what is the difference? I mean, do a lot of people like you know?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think it's they're very certain of what's happening. They're very certain of their belief system, of what they've been told. If this was happening, it would have come down in some technical bulletin. It would have been presented, or somebody would have done a paper and it would have been published. Those kind of things would have happened, and it hasn't. And that's how typically information gets within the scientific community, is somebody goes out, does the research, brings it back, and publishes it. and then sometimes it's peer reviewed and just doesn't get in at all.
So well, you've got a website up. What's the peer review word in on what you've published so far?
If I was to do that, there would be a big debate. I figured it's just better to put the information out there and let people absorb it.
What I mean is, though, you've had feedback.
I have had feedback, and it's stunned disbelief. Stunned disbelief.
Stunned disbelief. Well, the implication of that is that they're stunned at what they see, and what they don't, they just absolutely don't believe what they're seeing, or they refuse to believe that.
They need time to let it sink in, and they need to go out and then see the geometry in the sky for themselves, and then that knowing happens. But it doesn't happen at once. It doesn't happen in one sitting. It has to be just slowly absorbed, because it's a mind shift. It's
okay, so
having the carpet ripped out from underneath you.
Then as a weather man, you just have, it comes down to, you just said it, a knowing. In other words, you've looked at enough of these malformed clouds to know that there's man's hand in there, and those are manipulated formations.
There's no question in my mind. There's no question. I had that epiphany back on June 7th. And when that epiphany occurred, I got sick to my stomach. And I got chills that just rolled across my body, because I understood what was happening. Looking at some of this imagery, the epiphany occurred, and I knew what was happening.
Do you recall the triggering event?
Yeah, it was a satellite picture, and it was it's on this site. I'll have to dig it up here, but
I'd very much like to see that. So when you find it, we've got a break coming up pretty soon. You can direct me to it, and we'll all take a look. I would like to see that myself. But one day you just took a look at a.
The geometry in a regular cold front, and it was regular. There were these odd squares at the end of the tail end of this front that just did not match with terrain. And when I saw it, I knew that if one boring little cold front in early June was being altered, then that meant it all had to be. It was yes or no, and that was the yes moment for me.
Okay. Do you think the U.S. is doing this? Do you think there are other countries doing it and we are not? We're just the victims of it? Or
no.
What?
I think, from my understanding, is that there are 20 entities, not countries, but entities.
Entities.
And there are countries included within that header, entities that do this. And they all have their agendas. They all have their different ways of play. You give an 8-year-old boy a BB gun, what's he going to do with it? He's going to play with it. He's going to use it. And once this is, discovered, it's going to be played with. It's going to be experimented with.
And that's what's going on out there.
That's what's happening.
All right, Scott, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. A TV weatherman named Scott Stevens is my guest, and he's saying there's no question about it. It's our weather. It's being manipulated by man's hand. I still want.